Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy. And there's a great read up on ESPN.com right now entitled Andrew Luck Finally Reveals Why He Walked Away from the NFL. And it is written by our next guest, Seth Wickersham, ESPN senior writer. And Seth, thanks for doing this. I guess you might not have gotten an opportunity to write this thing if you were not an extreme skier. It says in your Twitter profile that you hella ski. Like, what is entailed in extreme skiing? Hella ski just sounds like you jump out of a helicopter onto a ski hill.
Yeah, well, you kind of do. I've heli skied in Alaska where I spent most of my childhood, and it's not nearly as exciting getting out of a helicopter as one would think. You actually kind of roll out, and the helicopter kind of lowers down the mountain. You essentially kind of roll out of it. And grab your skis from racks that are underneath the helicopter. It's not a very elegant process.
Oh, nobody's ever in the history of heliskiing, like, downplayed heliskiing. It's like, I know it sounds like you're jumping out of a helicopter to go skiing, but it only kind of, it's more of a roll than a jump.
In my head, it's skydiving, but you land on skis.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but like, heliskiing, at least in my experience in Alaska, you know, the skiing itself is more of an endurance challenge than a terrain challenge. You know, I think that, like, in a lot of places on mountains in North America, Whistler, Blackcomb, Jackson Hole, Alyeska, there's a lot of runs you can take that are harder than actually heli skiing. From what I've done with heli skiing, it's actually the hardest thing is actually the snow is so deep that your legs just burn right away. So it's more of an endurance thing. But yeah, you know, I was like glad, you know, after 22 years of doing this professionally, maybe my athletic ability finally paid off in a way that helped me with some journalism.
Seth, I have a cousin who lives in Anchorage. Next time I go visit him, are there like heliski bunny hills where I could just like say I did it? Because I do some writing and I would love to be able to put that in my Twitter bio for the next heliskiing athlete who wants someone they can connect with that way.
Are you suggesting that maybe I should try to retroactively expense all of my heli skiing and all of my skiing, frankly, back to ESPN? Maybe I'll see how that goes over.
Yeah, that's a good call. I endorse it. I'd approve that thing. All right, so yeah, let's talk about this great piece of writing. As Andrew Luck is, you're the first one to my knowledge to get the type of answers that we saw in your piece. Were you expecting the responses, the TikTok that you got from Andrew Luck?
It's a good question. Yeah, there was a moment where I was at his house and, you know, he says, you know why you're here, right? And I'm like, why? And he goes, because you ski. And I was like, okay, because he skis too. You know, what I expected. I think that I had a gut sense that when he walked away, he would be dealing with the ripple effects of that decision for a long time and not just the external ones, because he, you know, a lot of Colts fans are mad at him still about when he walked away right on the eve of the regular season. And he regrets the timing of when he retired. He wished he had actually done it earlier, but it's more the internal things. I think that, like, once you become a quarterback, especially one like him, first pick of the draft, someone expected to be not only great, but transformative, transcendent. It's just not something you walk away from. Like, your self-identity is wrapped up in it. It's you know, it's a large part of how you might define yourself. And as you know, in America, it's like once you're a high-profile quarterback, it's like being a president. Like, that's how everybody sees you forever and maybe how you see yourself. And so I kind of had the gut sense that he would be dealing with those things. And, you know, it was true that he was, but the ways that he was dealing with them were different than I anticipated, which is great.
Well, that's why, in my opinion, Frank Reich had the right idea of just like always be the backup and the, you know, the culture guy and the help the main guy out. Those quotes from him were pretty, I mean, humorous, but also illuminating about what that relationship was like. So much of the time that I spent reading that story, Seth, I kept trying to apply and as an elite quarterback like that with all those expectations, it's an extreme scenario. But I would imagine a lot of pro athletes who grow up, you know, we're at a time where there you can rank the top 13-year-old basketball prospects right now. And you know, high school sports are very made into a big deal. I guess what I kept thinking about is what can we learn from Andrew Luck's story and his experience to try to nudge us toward, I guess, a more holistic look at athletes and their health?
Well, just how hard it is to put yourself first and your body first and your health first and your happiness and maybe your family first when you're under that pressure, and how complicated it is. Andrew Luck walked away in part because he was in so much pain, and it wasn't only because of the pain that he was in, it was because of how he acted in pain when he was kind of moody and selfish and a spoiled brat, his trainer told me. But he also took a lot of pride in playing in pain. Like, it still does. Like, it's one of the things that he defines himself by as an athlete is being accountable, and the deep sense of pride he took in finishing a game if he started it. And so all of this stuff is really a perfect cocktail of contradictions and ironies that Andrew Luck has spent 3 years trying to sort out. And he finally has gotten to the point where, as he told me, he's reached the clarity that he doesn't need clarity.
Yeah. I wonder how rare he is, Seth, because, and you would be the man to know, or to tell us about it, because you've spoken to many high level pro athletes. You've spoken to many quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, how different was it talking to Andrew Luck than some of the experiences you've had?
It was different because of his age. And I do think that a lot of quarterbacks, usually when they retire, who are, you know, great quarterbacks, you know, guys who are defined is that in the culture. I think that they all kind of face this road where the world stops revolving around them. And even though they knew that maybe that was an unhealthy way for everyone to live, they got used to that. And there's a part of them that will always kind of want that in a small way and kind of enjoyed that. And they liked having leverage in every room that they entered. And, you know, I think that, like, there's a lot of people when they walk away from the game who go through some hard times. You know, John Elway was obviously one of them. I think that, like, you know, Joe Montana just disappearing, basically did 1 year of TV and then disappeared to the vineyards where he would run wine. There's a lot of guys who, you know, when they leave and the way that they were treated ends, they have to kind of face that reckoning and readjust and recalibrate to who they are. And Andrew faced the same thing, but he was so much younger. And especially when the pandemic hit, he was at his new house. It was getting built with his wife, and they had a young daughter. And it was just the three of them, which was beautiful. And it also just left Andrew so few outlets to talk to. So he was really just trying to talk out all these things with his wife all the time. And his wife, Nicole, at one point just was listening to him talk and all of these words that lead to so few conclusions. And she said, you know, she was thinking, like, you know, how much easier it is to deal with a newborn than a retired quarterback. And finally she said, Andrew, how can someone talk about themselves so much?
So Seth, when you hear that and you explore this story with Andrew, especially where you come from in terms of, you know, probably the most notable thing you've written, It's Better to Be Feared, your book about the New England Patriots dynasty. Do you see this as kind of like, do you compare Andrew Luck and Tom Brady at all, where Andrew Luck walked away at a fairly early point and this has been his journey, and Tom Brady here, much older at this point, is still dealing with, you know, when you said that some of them have trouble with not being the guy or not being in the limelight anymore, it made me think immediately of Tom Brady's saga this offseason where he retired and unretired. How do you feel about
reports that his career helped lead to his divorce? I mean, my entire book about the New England Patriots is about, you know, how that greatness, that durable greatness of unprecedented greatness from Bill Belichick and Tom Brady was created, what were the forces that led to it, and what the costs of it were. And, you know, I wrote about it in my book, and Tom and Giselle, particularly Giselle over the years, have been very public about the costs of his obsession. Remember, she once said, as far as I'm concerned, football is his first love.
Right.
His true love. I mean, you know, that's not easy. And now, where do the parallels go with luck? I don't quite know. I think that, like, luck in 2017 was in such a bad place. He had an injured shoulder for 2 years. He was scared to death that his career was going to be over. And as worldly as he seemed at times, being the Stanford grad and the architecture major, you know, he was very limited. He was a football junkie. He defined himself, and his self-identity was wrapped up in being a quarterback. And he worked so hard and was so ruthless about creating an environment that helped him live up to the expectations of the city, the town, and himself, that, like, really he didn't develop very much. You know, he told me, I knew myself best as a quarterback, and I didn't know other pieces of my personality at all. And in 2017, he went to Holland, just him and his wife and his trainer, to work at this facility in Holland. And it was during that time that all of these designs, his survival mechanisms, that the world that he had created kind of was exposed to be fatally flawed, in that it was stunting his development as a human. You know, his wife was running out of patience with him, and the fact that he wouldn't communicate, and that he wouldn't really, she was like a silo in a siloed life. Mm. And, you know, once he opened up his mind and started the process of learning how to, you know, be a true equal partner and, you know, a better communicator to his wife, and put his family and himself and his health and happiness first in front of the team, I think really, even though he played another year and won Comeback Player of the Year and had a great year, I think the beginning of the end of his career was during that time in 2017 in Holland. Because once his mind was kind of exposed to that, I don't think there was anything, there was no going back.
Well, who knows if Tom Brady actually had his mind truly exposed to the retirement idea, whether there was always the plan to come back and play this year. But it does feel like he's coming back next year, Seth. And again, you're a guy that would know. There's all kinds of rumblings about maybe a return to New England. I know that Sean Payton was on his podcast, and maybe those two guys getting together. There's also, of course, the return to the hometown team and team in the San Francisco 49ers. Do you have any inkling?
I mean, I don't think he'll be back with the Bucs. It's just, this is just me speaking. I don't have any reporting, but I think that, like, you know, I would guess that his time in Tampa's done. Now is his career. I cannot see him going back to New England. I know that, you know, it wasn't really a report. It was kind of like floating an idea, but I just do not think he will go back to New England, go back to that environment. And even though he's on good terms with Bill Belichick and want to play for the offensive staff that they've assembled there, I think he's been there, done that. And if he continues playing, he's going to do it elsewhere. San Francisco is a very, very attractive thing. His hometown team, his parents can drive to games. Remember, he wanted to play there when he was a free agent in 2020. And the Niners were actually the ones who picked Jimmy Garoppolo over Brady. But I will say this. He's now a divorced dad. As we know, divorce can be hard on kids. He's got, you know, two kids with Giselle, one older son, who have known nothing other than their dad being a football player and, you know, kind of being on Belichick time for half the year. And I do wonder if playing across the entire country while his kids are on the East Coast would just be one step too far in terms of, you know, not putting your family first.
Well, and if my experience with divorce is anything, when my parents did it, every second weekend, you're at dad. So that would be, he'd only be able to play half the games. So,
yeah,
that'd be not tough. To make light of a serious situation, but I wanted a little bit of levity because we're gonna go into something else pretty deep. Seth, one of the other big stories you've been working on lately is all of this around Commanders owner Dan Snyder, the leaks about John Gruden, now the leaks from court cases or the you know, the
congressional investigation.
Yes, yeah. The congressional investigation. Sorry, I missed the term there. I guess part of me wants to ask if, I'm sure you knew all of this stuff was accurate when you reported, but a little bit of vindication after people denied it, and now it's coming out in the through this investigation. But bigger to that, what are our next steps here? What are we looking at that's going to come from this congressional investigation?
Yeah, I mean, the investigation mentioned our reporting I did with Don Van Natta and Tisha Thompson many times. Remember, we reported that Dan Snyder had told people that he had dug up dirt on other owners in Roger Goodell, with at least partially through the use of private investigators. He wrote the owners and the league a letter denying that and saying he would never do that. And here he has his former team president, longtime team president, under oath, talking about how Dan said he was going to put private eyes on the commissioner just to dig up something on him. sure, it's vindication, but we felt comfortable in our story at the time. I think that, you know, again, this continues to ratchet up the heat. How long is the league and how long are these owners going to allow a cloud over a once cherished franchise to exist, and a cloud over all of them? I mean, this is a damning report, congressional report for the league also. In our story, even though some of this reporting got obscured by some of the private investigator things and, you know, Dan Snyder telling confidants that he could blow up the league with what he knows. We reported about how the league was in lockstep and helping Dan Snyder cover this stuff up.
Yeah.
And so I think that the congressional testimony really amplified that, the congressional report. And again, we know who Dan Snyder is at this point. I think the question is, what are the owners and what are Roger Goodell willing to do about it? And every time Roger Goodell is asked about it, he asks for patience for the league issued report by Mary Jo White to come out. Nobody's sure when that's coming out. It's probably early 2023. And he makes it also clear that it is an owner driven decision to if anyone were to remove him. So I don't know where that leaves us. I mean, a lot of owners are very frustrated that Roger Goodell doesn't even have conversations in the owners only meetings about Dan Snyder, ignoring the elephant in the room.
Yeah, it does feel like he's finally going to get out. Well, the getting's, I was going to say good, but yeah, before the people with the pitchforks and the torches that are actually capable of removing him actually do. I mean, fingers crossed for Commanders fans. And the human race, really. Seth, thanks for this. Appreciate it.
All right. Great to talk to you guys, as always.
All right. See you, Seth. ESPN senior writer. Great article. Again, it's a long read, so make sure you got some time. But that's what bathroom breaks are for.
No. It's a bathroom breaks are for a real quick read.
Oh, okay.
Ben hasn't worked a real job in a really long time.
Yeah.
You can't just disappear for...
Buddy, I've never worked a real job in my entire life. I've worked real part-time jobs. Like, I've worked at a movie theater. I've been a cashier at a grocery store. I've delivered newspapers when I was a child. But no, in my professional life, since I turned 18, I've not worked a normal job. Like, in an office, that's what terrifies me. And I used to joke about this with J.D. Bunkus all the time, because he has limited experience in the real world, because he started his career a little bit later. Mostly.
Also, just because of the way his brain works.
Yeah, but if I ever lost his job, I don't, like, I have to interact with people in, like, a normal office environment. I don't know. You've done it. What's it like? Tell me. You've been a normie. What's it like to be a normie?
I've been a normie. I've had just about every job under the sun. I think the first thing you would need to learn is that, no, you can't just disappear for half an hour into the bathroom, because people would either A, know you're slacking off, or B, like, call the ambulance.
You said slacking off, people, okay? Slacking off. All right.
I don't understand that.
All right, that's fine.
The other thing is, there is an element of truth to this. So, Toyota, cover your ears. When I was deciding if I was going to stay working in that industry and using my business degree, or go to law school, which I was enrolled in, or try to make a go of it as a sports writer, that is something that I was doing a fair amount of. Not the bathroom part, but the, oh, I'm going to book a meeting room and have a meeting, and it's blocked off in my calendar and I'm not at my desk.
And nobody verifies that the meeting exists?
Who's going to verify? Everyone's too busy with their own stuff, and my work got done.
Oh.
And
I think that's what we came to a realization with over the last couple of years with people working from home is that it shouldn't matter as long as people get the work done.
They gave me, you know, I was working 50 hours a week for a job that once I was in it 6 months, I'd automated a bunch of my processes, and it only took me 30 hours a week. And some of that time went to reading the Seth Wickershams of the world and writing my own thing. I did a bunch of Excel courses to sharpen my Excel stuff. And, I mean, I was already pretty good at it, but I learned how to do some extra stuff. And the nice thing about that is if you're teaching yourself Excel stuff and it looks like Excel, no one's looking that closely at what it is. I was doing my own version of like baseball prospectuses, Bacota projections and stuff. And it made me better at my job. It did, because I needed all that Excel stuff. Wow. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of cars that were built with like only three wheels or something.
Was not when I was on the manufacturing line. This was when I was in the office. So they still got the wheels put on.
All right. Okay. There's a bunch of papers that weren't collated correctly.
Yeah. You can't. No, they were collated correctly. I just made the process more efficient. So it didn't. I performed I performed so well that I was no longer needed in my job full time. Okay.
So that sounds bad.
Nobody hear that.
Yeah. Okay. So that real world job sounds bad. I hope to never have to do it. You know what else sounds bad? Like, honestly, because this is, well, you were thinking about other things, reading the Andrew Luck piece. I was thinking about, and I've always thought about, man, if you made $100 million, if you made enough to support yourself for the rest of your life playing that sport, in that sport in particular, where it is so brutal, and you put, like, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but not that much, of your life on the line every Sunday, especially as a quarterback where, yeah, you're the target and you can walk away with your faculties. Like, it kind of reminds me of boxing in a way. Like, yeah. And this is obviously coming from a person who doesn't have that drive like pro athletes do, or, you know, spent my entire life building up to the point that I can become one of the most famous people in the world and get the accolades of being a professional quarterback. But I don't know how anybody taking the sports fandom away from it, and of course Colts fans, they had a difficult time doing this, would ever fault a guy for saying, you know what, it sucks to be hurt. This is not fun anymore. See you later. All the power to Andrew Luck.
It's great. It's really good for him from a personal level, it sounds like, from a figuring out who you are standpoint, a family standpoint. The reason that more people don't do it beyond, as Andrew Luck describes, he was just hardwired from such a young age to like view his entire existence through the lens of being QB1. Like, that's a really hard thing to shake out of. The other thing is, as cool as it is to be able to retire on $100 million, it would probably, I've never had $100 million, so I can't confirm this, it would probably be even cooler to retire with like $300 million.
Nah, it's the same. There's only so many yachts you can buy. I don't know.
This guy like built a house from scratch with his own architect. You don't think he wants another crack at that? Just build a whole bunch of, it's Andrew Luck land. All the buildings are built by Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck land. And I was disappointed that Seth did not answer your question about the heli skiing bunny hill, because not only is that like something that you can put in your back pocket, but like that sounds, I mean, it's probably too expensive to do, right? That's the thing. Like, it sounds like it's expensive to rent a helicopter to fly you to the top of a mountain to go skiing. But if there was such a thing where, you could just say you did the damn thing, I'd 100% do that.
I'll tell you this. The next time I'm in a writing role, and I've got like a, I don't know, like a white whale story topic that I'm trying to get, I'm going to do my research on the hobbies and side interests of that potential subject.
Oh,
and
man.
I'm going to become so well versed. Like, it's not going to go well for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, Fred Van Vliet, I saw that you do some boxing as part of your your workouts in the offseason. Want to beat me up so I can get this story?
I was thinking more like Serge Ibaka, that you'd like pre-ate the bull testicle or whatever.
Yes, actually, your seasoning's all wrong here. This brings out the bull testicle in the bull testicle. I don't know.
Yeah, the essence of the bull testicle.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with that one. Yeah. But yes, something like that.
Yeah. All right. We came around to bull testicle. That was good.
You want to make fun of the Red Sox a little bit after this?
Yeah, I do. I want to talk baseball. There's some soccer I want to talk about as well. There's lots to get to in the final segment of this program. So let's take a break and then return to do that part of the program. As the Fan Drive Time continues, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. You just missed it, Blake. During the break, producer Mike Gentile was telling me he's going to Mariah Carey.
Hmm.
He's in town. Oh, he's not. Sorry. His wife is. He bought tickets for his wife and his sister. They're going to Mariah Carey in December. Can you imagine? Like, does that. So, All I Want for Christmas Is You. Does she start the concert with that, or is that like a closer, or is that like first encore? How do you figure that goes?
I think it goes like Homer Simpson seeing Bachman and Turner Overdrive, mm-hmm. and it's like taking care of business. And they're like, yeah, we're going to play it. It's one of our biggest.
Yeah.
And then everyone just yells for it until she plays it. So she ends up playing it like six times.
Yeah.
But she's got a whole Christmas album, right? Like she could,
I don't know. That's the only one I know.
She could do a dual set with like, hey, here are the Mariah top 40 bangers, and then hey, here's the Christmas side of this show, and then we'll come back for an encore and we'll see.
Interesting.
That's how I'd play it if I were her.
Okay.
I'll go like, I don't know, eight.
You gave a really thoughtful answer. Like I appreciate
a lot about
that.
Set lists. I go to a lot of concerts.
I appreciate that. All right. This soccer report is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling system. CertainTeed, pro all the way. Just one more sleep until we do get these quarterfinal matches. But we have some Team Canada soccer news, actually, is according to reports, Team Canada midfielder Tejon Buchanan has had some conversations with some Premier League clubs and some Serie A clubs.
A couple of them, right?
Yeah.
Because the rumors seem to, I thought at one point I had like misread or misremembered, and then it's like, no, there are just a lot of people after him.
Yeah, there are. And apparently they pegged his value at about $20 million in a transfer fee. And European soccer is interesting when it comes to how you can move. There's transfer windows, and there's one upcoming in the winter here. He currently plays for Club Bruges in Belgium. They're Champions League clubs. It's not like a tiny club or anything, but yeah, it's a different deal if you're playing in the Premier League or you're playing in Italy for a Serie A team. Also, Ismail Koné a couple of days ago is going to Watford from Montreal, which is currently in the English Championship, but they're fourth in the table there. And the top two, so that's the if people are uninitiated, the Championship is the league right below the English Premier League, and there are three teams promoted to the Premier League from the Championship. Top two get automatic promotion, and then three through six, they play like a little tournament to get in. And that team, Watford, currently in fourth in the table there. So, like, you know, could be a Premier League club next year. And we already know about Alistair Johnson playing for Celtic, which is not in the big leagues, but that's a big club. And again, a Champions League club. So the thing we talked about needing to happen for these Canadian players before 2026, it feels like early returns are starting to happen already.
It does sound like that. And this is, you know, I'd have trouble leaving Bruges myself. Also, you know, people do the stupid, is it a Christmas movie or not arguments this time of year.
Never seen it.
In Bruges?
No.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
One of my favorite movies.
You've never seen Grizzly Man, who we talked, I just mentioned in the break.
Not only have I not seen it, I don't have a concept in my head of what it is.
Oh, dude, it's a documentary about a guy who thought he had like a special understanding with the grizzly bears, and like every summer would go up to Alaska. It's Werner Herzog, great documentary. Yeah, I was either deciding to say that or documentary filmmaker, which I thought would be easier, except I screwed it up. But yeah, it's incredible. And all the footage is shot by the guy. Anyways, I don't want to spoil it for you, but it is truly one of the great documentaries ever made. Where were we? What were we talking about?
We were talking about Tejan Buchanan potentially leaving Bruges for a bigger club, along with Alistair Johnson going to Celtic and Ishmael Kone going to which club did he say it was? Watford?
Yeah, Watford.
Okay.
All right. And then lastly,
can we get one of these Canadian guys on Fulham, please?
Okay.
Fulham. Right. So I
Craven Cottage is where they play, Fulham, which is one of the great names for any sports structure ever built.
Yes. West Craven College. Get real goth with it. So I don't have a team, but if I were like one, there were a couple years ago where basically some friends that I was watching a fair amount of soccer with, I think it was around the last World Cup time, were like, pick a team. It'll be easier to follow along or whatever. And because I'm a Jacksonville Jaguars fan.
Yeah. Oh, Shad Khan.
I picked Fulham. I was like, oh, there's some synergy there. You know, Jacksonville goes over there all the time. And, you know, now they also own AEW.
Do they? Oh, yeah, that's right. The Sun operates AEW, yes. Doesn't he?
And then immediately they got relegated. Yeah. They're back up now. Yeah. But, yes. So if Fulham could get some Canadian reinforcements, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. I also tried to do with the NFL where I tried to take on a Premier League team and become a fan of Tottenham. And
well, that's the right one. That's, I would say, like Toronto sports Twitter, Tottenham has the most fans. Tottenham or Liverpool.
Oh, yeah. And Steve Nash is a diehard. And like anytime I can align myself with Steve Nash seems like a good idea. And it's like, if I see that they win, I'm like, oh, that's nice. But no, I can't do it. I can't force it. I'm too old. It just does not work.
Well, what if one of these on the upswing Canadians happens to land on a team that you feel a bit of an attachment to? Maybe you follow Tejan Buchanan. I guess if you were going to do that, you'd already be a Bayern fan.
Yeah, Bayern. But that, like, it's just so...
The lone footy kid I own, the really? Alfonso Davies. Yeah, a friend brought it back to me. From Germany.
No, it's hard. And I know Tottenham is one of the big four in the Premier League, but they're not, like, it's just icky, I think, if you're going to choose a team to go, like, hey, Manchester City or Manchester United or Chelsea. Like, I don't know.
I can agree with that. But I will warn you, do not pick a team like Fulham who could immediately get relegated as soon as you start.
You want someone like,
for them.
Right? And honestly, Tottenham is kind of the perfect team because they never win, right? Like they're always in the mix. Yeah, they're in the mix. Like an Everton, maybe. Yeah. Anyways.
So what you want is a Toronto Blue Jays.
All right. Do you want to talk about Ronaldo? Like the report that he was going to leave Qatar, but everybody tamped it down. The only thing I would say about this is that it's one thing to be pouty and like upset with Manchester United and a club team. It's quite another for like, even though you're a legend in Portugal forever and nothing can impact that, I would think. But like, yeah, what are we doing here? It's the World Cup. And I guess maybe you'll be around in 4 years. Maybe this is it. Like, can you imagine Cristiano Ronaldo, one of the greats of all time, was like, thanks, see you later. I'm out of here because you subbed me off late in a game that we lost and then didn't start me the next game.
And
that
my replacement got a hat trick.
And we crushed the opposition. And I was like, see you forever. Yeah. Would be a bad look.
That part of it would be a bad look. Where my head went with the bad look is, well, everyone says I'm a bad teammate and I have a bad attitude. So I'm taking my ball and I'm leaving the World Cup. I won't even support. I won't even stick around. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's he's sticking around. So good for him. And maybe he'll score before the tournament is done. This soccer report was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way. So you referenced some baseball and some fun we were going to have at the expense of the Boston Red Sox. I guess I don't think the Red Sox would be all that pleased to be paying Xander Bogaerts when he's 40 years old to play shortstop, $20+ million. But
however, there are reports that Xander Bogaerts was willing to take much smaller deals than this over the course of the negotiations, whether that was in season on extension
or preseason. Like, they absolutely lowballed the hell out of Xander Bogaerts.
Yes, and the Jose Altuve contract, which is very affordable, was kicked around as a potential comp. So I'd imagine there are some Red Sox fans quite upset that that didn't get done. They then immediately turn and route some of that money into Masataka Yoshida, who got $90 million when you factor in the posting fee and everything.
And, I thought it was over 100 million plus posting. Yeah.
So Kylie McDaniel of ESPN has a piece up that it's almost entirely just like execs being like, what the heck? Like, he's got five or six different, like, no one wants to put their name on it, but big time. So
you're talking about Yoshida.
Yeah. I will send, and it's not, Kylie is very, very clear through this piece that he believes in Yoshida's bat, and a lot of executives and scouts around the league that he talks to believe in the bat. But as a small outfielder who's not very good defensively, who doesn't have a ton of power, the room for error there is pretty small. And also, we were looking up earlier guys who have hit 300, but just like not produced a lot of actual value beyond that because of a lack of power or defense or base running. So Kylie does a good job establishing the bat as a tool and everything else that makes Yoshida an interesting major league player. The dollar amount, though, and I'll read from the piece here. I sent texts around to a number of scouts and execs explaining what I thought his tools were and asking what I was missing between that scouting report and what the Red Sox paid. And this is the response from one international scouting director. Nothing.
Okay.
A third exec says, I have no idea. A fourth says, I wish them and him luck.
Well, and yeah, what I read was the Keith Law write-up on him. And again, like, nobody, there's lots of room to be wrong here in the evaluation of players.
Yep.
It wouldn't be the first time.
But also, depending on your team construct, a guy who can step in and hit 300 with a 360 OBP, even if he's not giving you elite defense, could be really, really useful.
Yeah, but they kind of gave up on Andrew Benintendi, who fit that bill, you know? Like, that was, they kind of ran Andrew Benintendi kind of out of the building, in fact, because he didn't hit for enough power.
Like, think about, now, this is maybe not the best comp because positionally or whatever, but in looking at 300 batting averages that didn't move the needle a ton in terms of wins added or whatever, Luis Arraez had an awesome season this year. The year prior, he hit 295 with a 360 OBP and was worth, like, he was a below average player based on wins above replacement or whatever metric you want to look. Now, Yoshida has a little bit more power than that, but he's also not as good defensively or on the base paths.
And so we'll see how much the power translates. He has like a 20 homer bat in the Japanese league, but the history of power hitters transitioning to the major leagues of baseball is checkered, to say the least. So we'll see.
Here's one thing you can say for the Red Sox and Yoshida, though. They actually got someone.
Yeah, honestly.
Found someone to take their money.
and you'd be, I'd be hilarious to play the other side of this and the arguments you'd be making to soothe the fears of Blue Jays fans if it was the Jays laying out $100 million for a 5'8" non-power hitting, non-defense playing corner outfielder. But yeah, it would be something. And at the moment, the Blue Jays have, I don't know, Kevin Biggio is opening day right fielder because Teoscar Hernandez was swapped out for Eric Swanson. And it's hard, like, again, like, we have to add this caveat before every conversation about the Blue Jays. Lots of room to go. There's lots of time to go and lots of players available. I would say, like, the idea, and I know one of their front office executives was on the record saying lots of good players. I would say there's perilously few, like, great players. And most of the great players are probably out of the Blue Jays price range. Like, there's Carlos Rodon, if you want a pitcher in free agency, and there's Brandon Nimmo, if you want a left-handed hitting center fielder. That's it.
Carlos Correa, if you want the chaos.
Right. If you're a fan of chaos. But that's it. Like, Jays could go out and, sign Michael Conforto to a short-term prove-it deal, and he's got lots of power, lots on base. At least he did 2 years ago when we last saw him. He can't play center field.
No. You can also rewind here. And before we all went in on Lars Nootbaar and Dylan Carlson, the spicy name and the name I sold you on was Dalton Varsho.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Dalton Varsho is good.
Nick Picoro of AZ Central today wrote, I mean, it's a longer piece than this, but in conversation with general manager Mike Hazen, said basically that the D-backs know they have outfield surplus. It's drawing a ton of interest. They think that's an asset they can use to address another need. And the Jays were listed as one of the teams, as you'd expect. So I think whether it's, you know, maybe it's not Varsho, maybe it's a Jake McCarthy or something like that. But the Diamondbacks do stand out as a potential trade partner, and we'll see what happens in the Sean Murphy trade discussions. Like, that's another domino that could fall.
But like, so the Blue Jays' best asset they have is the catching, which, according to projections, Blue Jays are projected to lead the major leagues in war out of the catching position with the catchers that they currently have, which makes a whole lot of sense. They have, you know, one really good hitting catcher and another catcher who's hit pretty well in limited samples, good defender, and one guy who's a really good prospect and should be real good and has shown the hit tool at the major league level. But there's other options, right? Like, Sean Murphy's out there. He's really good, too. Like, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's really, really quite good. And the team with the biggest need just went out and splashed money around and went out and got one. So I don't know. It does feel like the walls are closing in. I'm not an alarmist normally, and I've been the guy that's been tamping down some of the outsized pessimism in the fan base the last couple of years, and I've been proven correct because out they go and get the George Springers and the Kevin Gossmans of the world. This one does feel a little bit different though, Blake. Like, it really does. And the pressure seems a little bit different because they waved goodbye to Teoscar Hernandez with, like, you don't think they did that with the idea that they'd be able to fill that need in the last week here at the winter meetings? Like, I'm sure that was plan A, plan B, and maybe plan C. And all those are washed away, and there's still decent plans, but no real good ones left that I can see.
Teoscar Hernandez, 1 year, $14 million. You know how quickly you jump over that if he was a free agent right now? And I know Eric Swanson and Adam Macko add some arm depth to the system.
It had to be more than the money, though. This is what we went through, yes, right? It had to be.
It had to be more than the money. It had to be more than just Eric Swanson's a decent, you know, eighth inning candidate or something like that. It had, and all of our analysis, we broke it down, but there was this suspended conclusion that we have to see what the next thing is, because obviously there's a next thing.
I love how you did suspended conclusion and then took a nice pause suspended the conclusion of you talking about the suspended conclusion. Yeah, and I think a lot of people, because of the recent track record, gave the benefit of the doubt to the front office, which I did and still do. But I also, like, I have Spotrack. Like, I can see the remaining free agents. And I know how quickly, like, the pivot to, like, a reunion with Ross Stripling, and no offense to 34-year-old Ross Stripling coming off a career year, but, and the idea of, like, adding one starting pitcher, which means that, oh, yeah, Yusei Kikuchi or Mitch White is, like, somebody, one of those two is in the rotation on opening day. And then you can do the Varsho thing. You can talk about trades, and there are certainly good players available via trade. You have to give up something, and probably nothing from the major league roster, but, like, how quickly do you get to Ricky Tiedemann or somebody who's, like, Dalton Varsho's a proven major league player who plays center field. Do you think the Diamondbacks are like, yeah, give us just some guy? You know, like, obviously that's going to be an impactful player headed the other way. And there were options that we talked about, especially considering the money that was moved, that cost you nothing, or maybe a compensatory pick. And those are, and at least that part seemingly gone. And hey, I could be totally wrong, and tomorrow they pony up for Brandon Nimmo, which I still think is the best option. I know, you know, he's been hurt, and they'll have two outfielders in their 30s making $100 million. So what? Brandon Nimmo helps you win a World Series in 2023. Flags fly forever, and if you don't win, okay, I guess you're screwed to some degree, but they got the social spaces now and that are going to make $1 billion a year, so you got lots of money to spend.
I know that sometimes tying the actual baseball moves to the business moves, people don't like it. They don't, you know, like one of the things you could say about that Red Sox move is, well, I mean, look at the history of Japanese players who come in and are successful. Like, that contract pays for itself very, very quickly in non-baseball ways. And these are businesses and stuff. But I would say that the best way to run your business generally is to have a very good team. That's the best way to get people in the arena. And this is a front office that is not only renovating Rogers Center over the course of several years and pouring a lot of money into that, they're a team that is lobbying Major League Baseball for an all-star game.
Yep.
And guess what gets more eyeballs on your new stadium with all these renovated stadium.
As new as we're going to get.
You're hoping that it, you know, the appeal on television and things like that are elevated, and you know, Mark Shapiro is going to keep using the term a jewel event for the league, the Major League All-Star Game. The best way to get eyeballs on there, the best way to get people excited about your park and your city and it being a good spot for a baseball event, is to win a lot of games, be in the playoffs, so more people get to see your cool new stadium with your weird fence dimensions and stuff, and yeah. Keep Toronto in the conversation at the top of conversations about baseball cities.
Again, things can change tomorrow. Maybe behind the scenes, a Shohei Ohtani deal is being worked out. And then beyond that, Blue Jays are like keeping their powder dry for the $500 million, like the 10-year $500 million contract that you're going to outlay for Shohei Ohtani. But at this point, like that's. Yeah.
If you're going to pay that for Shohei Ohtani and you know that,
yeah,
and you're waiting on it.
Dude, honestly, I'd almost punt the year, right?
I was going to say the opposite.
Yeah.
I would say give whatever prospects you need and do it now.
Oh. Yeah, no, I would punt the year as far as paying money, though. Punt the year on paying Brandon Nimmo $25 million. If you're going to outlay, and honestly, I know, yeah, he's 30, right? He will be 30 when he's a free agent, Shohei Ohtani. 10 years, $500 million. Like, it'd be in the ballpark, I think, for a guy that can change your franchise in multiple different directions. And again, the marketing side of things. Like, imagine Shohei Ohtani in this city.
Winning a World Series.
Well, there's that as well. All right, so it's just to sum it up, it hasn't been a disappointing offseason for the Blue Jays. It's been like incomplete. Like their report card is marked as incomplete. And to my understanding, they're like one of the very few contenders who have done nothing. And like, you don't want to overreact, right? You don't want to do what the Red Sox did and say, oh crap, we got to do something. And let's sign the little guy who can't hit home runs to a $100 million deal. But you know, something would be good.
Last year, the Jays entered the season being picked by a lot of people, and a lot of people not in Toronto, so this wasn't a bias thing. These are people who the core part of their job is to be right. They're getting picked to go to the World Series, sometimes even win the World Series by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. All the projection metrics really like them. It looked like there was some upside in terms of what they could spend and things like that. Right now, and again, lots of offseason left, but this is the context we are analyzing within, because we can't just assume what's going to happen. The Blue Jays are 12th in payroll and they're 7th in projected winning percentage. And that's 7th in projected winning percentage is 3rd among AL East teams.
Yeah.
You can outperform that. Absolutely.
Right.
But that's where an unbiased kind of an attempt to be objective baseline has the Jays right now.
Yeah.
Average payroll. Above average, but not division winning team quality.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you would say on paper too, right?
Yeah. And 3 years away from the free agency of Bo and Vlad. So yeah, there's that also. All right. Time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Maple Leafs hosting Sean Durzi and the Los Angeles Kings tonight. And Leafs, of course, favored. -186 as the Kings road dogs, +155 in TJ Brody's return. Auston Matthews, +700 to score the first goal of the game. Marner to keep the point streak alive, push it to 21, -420, which is nice.
And that would leave it so no one ever remembers Babe Dye again.
Yeah, finally buried Babe Dye. And then Thursday Night Football, I guess maybe Baker Mayfield for the Rams?
Sure.
Raiders are -7 on the road, which isn't really on the road because there are no Los Angeles fans, and the total is 42.5. Soccer games tomorrow: Brazil -275 against Croatia, and the Netherlands underdogs against Argentina +123. That was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Deshaun Durzi score a goal tonight.
No, but he gets a power play assist.
Ooh.
And Netherlands is pulling off the upset.
Oh, I like it. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. This has been the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.